So last week, we spoke about different types of cholim on Shabbos, right? We talked about, we're going to pretty much go with the model that we have, which for the board, because we'll reference it again, is you have a cholo shegesh bo sakana. And a made up, so a made up alma. And then four is someone who's healthy. So he's a bari. Right? He doesn't really count, but he's healthy, so he's a bari. And then this one gets broken up into sakana, saver, and just choma. Right? Whether there's danger to the limb or he's just. Okay, so we're going to pretty much talk about these three. What I'd like to focus on first is going to be the cholos yesh bo sakana, the sick person who there's a risk of life. So we mentioned there are different types, we discussed different types of things, different types of people who could be a cholos yesh bo sakana, right? You could have an accident victim, a trauma victim, you could have a terminal cancer patient, you could have a diabetic. Each one of them represents different types of things that need to be done. In the first case, it's something that needs to be done right now. If you do not intervene and violate Shabbos, this man will die right now. So that's one type of action we have to do. There are other types of actions that we'll see by a terminal cancer patient. Maybe could wait a little bit. It doesn't need to be done this second. Maybe it doesn't need to be done this second. Maybe have time to think about what's the best way to do it in terms of Shabbos. Right? I mean, because, you know, he's been terminally cancerous for a little bit. I could wait a little bit. And the diabetic certainly has room to plan because he has this every day. He should be planning about this to start with. And then there's one last case of a cholos yesh bo sakana. Someone is in the hospital because of he's having surgery, and he's a cholos yesh bo sakana. Yes, he has an appendix. A cholos yesh bo sakana, the appendix can explode, you get an infection, there's a risk of death. Not very high, but it's a risk of death. Treatment of cholos yesh bo sakana. And he wants chicken soup. Right? Everyone's grandmother knows that chicken soup makes you feel better. But chicken soup isn't actually going to save his life, right? So he's a cholos yesh bo sakana. What are we allowed to do for him? Are we allowed to do for him everything? Do we treat him as if it was on a Wednesday, we make him chicken soup? Right, chicken soup, let's say you have to cook the chicken soup. So maybe you have to shech the chicken to make your chicken soup. So you can't do that on Shabbos. So if it's a cholos yesh bo sakana, maybe. So we'll see. Right, that is not actually going to save his life, but it might be part of the things he needs. Do we treat it like it's Wednesday, and on Wednesday we make him chicken soup? Or no? Are we more limited in what we can do? So we'll get to all of that. So before we start that, so I gave out, this is the Mishnah Berurah, the commentary in Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim. Simin Shin Kaf Ches in Shulchan Aruch is Din Chola B'Shabbos, a sick person on Shabbos. We're not going to go through all of it, just so you have it, you can see what it's about. If you go a couple of pages in, Simin Shin Kaf Ches is Almi Mechal B'Shabbos, who do we Mechal B'Shabbos for? Which we'll talk about a little bit. And Shin Lamed is Din Yoledes B'Shabbos, a laboring woman, some woman who's giving birth on Shabbos, which we'll talk about that also, but it goes in order, so I put it all in the packet. So if you could just bring the packets, each class will be helpful. We'll see things inside. I think it's easier than just putting it on the screen. Yeah.
I just have a question. Sure. We're probably going to go into it, but okay. Are painkillers considered medicine, even though they're not curing anything, they're just masking pain?
So that's a good question, right? So what is medicine and what is not? It's a pill.
Right.
So it's a pill, and we're taking it as medicine. So it seems to be medicine. But let's say I could find some fruit that also masks the pain. So the question is it because it looks like a pill or because it's curing your pain? Because the nafkamina would be, well, what if you only eat oranges because you have a cold? Right? There's no problem with eating oranges on Shabbos. Can you eat oranges on Shabbos to cure your cold? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that when we get to a cholos ein bo sakana, meichus ba'alma, because that's where it becomes relevant. So for a cholos yesh bo sakana, we're pretty much going to set everything aside, right? We're going to talk about different types of cholos yesh bo sakana. The cholos yesh bo sakana where things are immediate, everything's going to be set aside, and where things are not immediate, we'll have a little bit more time to think about it, right? In most cases of someone collapses, it's immediate, but in cases where we're in the hospital, we're planning how to run the department, or someone has diabetes, and they can plan ahead of time how to deal with it, you have more room to think about it. So before we do that, though, I just wanted to see one general rule in Shulchan Aruch. So Shin Kaf Ches. So we're going to start with Sif Beis. Anyone want to read? I'll read Sif Beis, right? It's on the second line of Shin Kaf Ches.
Sif is the
Simin is the chapter, and Sif is the paragraph within the chapter. So it's the bold base. It's the second line, but more than halfway through. You want to read?
Mishi Yishlo Holi Shosakana.
Right? So someone who has a who's a cholas or yesh bosan, he has some disease that's putting him at risk for life. Right, there's a mitzvah to violate Shabbos to help him. Right, so what's a zariz?
The person who hastens to...
Right, the one who does it quickly is meshubach. It's a good thing. You should do this as quickly as you can. Right, you need to save his life. Do it as quickly as you can.
Okay,
what's that mean? Anyone know?
One who's like going back and forth. Oh, should I do this? Should I not? Like
not exactly. Not exactly. It's important. What's a she'ela? Like a shayla. Who asks a question? If you ask a question about it, hareza shofeh damim. What's shofeh damim? It's a murder. If the guy collapses on the floor and you have to go to run to the rabbi, should I call hatzala? Is it mutter to call hatzala? Is it not mutter to call hatzala? It's as if you murdered the guy. You need to know that it's mutter, right? And let's say you don't know. Right? So you don't know. Did he faint? Is he okay? Did he fall asleep? Hashoel harayz hashofer chadam. It's a little bit intense.
Maybe he wrote that for emphasis.
No, I think he wrote it on purpose. I think he wrote it on purpose that...
Is that right?
We'll see. Generally not. Generally things are clear cut. So I think the reason he's saying that, that's how weird. Are you really a murderer? Are we going to kill you? Right? We kill murderers in the Besdin. I don't think anyone's going to say that's a ritzicha and we're going to put you to... We can give you capital punishment.
Right,
so maybe that's a little bit much. Speech. But I think that part I think is a figure of speech. I think what he's saying is, look, you don't have, we're gonna see the Gemara. The Gemara says that we'll look at it now, that you don't have to be a vadai. How certain do you have to be that there's a cholos or yesh bo sakana? Is it without this he's certainly gonna die? Without this he's absolutely gonna die right now? Or well there's a good chance he'll die, or there's a chance he'll die. Even the suffix, you're allowed to mechal Shabbos for. We'll see the Gemara. So I think what he's saying is, and Dr. Abraham likes to say this, I think I ended the shiur last time, is if you have a suffix that this is a cholos yesh bo sakana, if you think there's a chance, then he is a cholos yesh bo sakana, and you treat him like a cholos yesh bo sakana until someone who knows better than you says no. So if you have to ask a question, right, then he might be, right? And if he might be, then he is. And if he is, then you mechal Shabbos. Yeah.
Are you saying that because of this Shoel thing, that means that if there's a suffix,
no, we know that. We'll look at the Gemara that if there's a suffix from Chal Shabbos, we'll see the Gemara that says if there's a suffix from Chal Shabbos.
So you're saying so?
Yeah.
The Porfman, what's the Porfman?
Bury, someone who's healthy.
Ah.
He's not sick at all, but we're going to use him as everybody else. So, right, because on the suffix from Chal Shabbos, so what kind of suffix? You have to go to a radiologist and see does he really have, an intestinal obstruction? Until you get there, it's not a suffix? No. If you think that he's in life danger, that's a suffix. And if it's a suffix, we treat a suffix like a vadai, and therefore you must bechal Shabbos, because he's just like a cholos yesh bo sakana, and you must bechal Shabbos for him. And if you don't, you didn't actively kill him, but you could have saved his life. So if you look at the Mishnah Berurah here, Mishnah Berurah Vav, all right, let me read it. Mishnah Berurah Vav, so it's in the second column, about two thirds of the way down.
Mitchase.
Somebody wants to be like a chassid, like very frum. Right, so this person's afraid to mechal Shabbos unless a rabbi tells him it's mutter. It's as if he killed the guy. Why? Yechela, shall become weak, right? In the time that it takes him to go ask the question, the guy will become weak and sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then his life will really be in danger because you went to go ask a shiloh. Right, lo tamod olam reichi, not to stand by while your brother's blood is being spilled. It doesn't mean just while his brother's blood is being spilled. If someone needs help, you must help them, and you violate a negative prohibition if you don't. Right, so the Rishalmi says, not Hashoel, it says also Hashoel Areza Shofei Klamim. The person who asks, as if he's a murderer, right? It says Hanishal, the one who is asked, Areza Meguna. It's a very terrible thing. Hanishal, the rabbi who's asked. The Rishalmi is saying that the rabbi who's asked the question, he's also at fault. Why?
because he should have taught his...
Right! You should teach your Kehillah that your Mechalel Shabbos B'Safek. Right? It's your fault that your congregants are coming to you on Shabbos. And that's pretty much what he says. Right? Ayel Nidrosh B'Pirkei Lakol. They should know this. And that's wrong. So, I have a friend who, a chavrusa took a shul. Right? He finished the yeshiva and he went to take a shul. So, the first Shabbos, so he gave a shir. That's called Shir B'Sakana. Because... You have to tell them, otherwise, Anishal Areisa Megunden. You have to make sure that they know. I mean, they probably know, but you have to tell them they know. Otherwise, if you're not only are they Shofar Chachamim, which is a terrible thing, but it's also Anishal Areisa Megunden. So that's exactly what he says. You don't have to read it, sorry. But he says pretty much the same thing. He says, look, not only do you have to know, but it's even on the rabbi to make sure that the congregants know also. So, that's just an important thing to realize that we really, 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 really take this seriously. Okay? So, here the Tzitz Eliezer quotes a Tashbetz. So, just he makes this point even further. So the rabbi will be like, it's okay, you can do it. But when it comes to himself, he won't do it. That's an Nishal Reza Megumen. That under the same circumstances, he wouldn't, but he tells you to do it. That's an Nishal Reza Megumen. If it's something that you have to pass in, you're not allowed to be, you can't say, look, I'm the rabbi, I'm the machmer. You're not allowed to do that. If it's a question for your nefesh, you're obligated to do whatever is necessary. You can't, he says, b'sha'ah shebali yodol obo inyin chil shabbos b'koch nefesh, who will say, that's more rakanish al mora lachayim l'chal. Avu l'atzma inyin l'chal. You can't do that. You can't say that I'm going to be too firm about it. So, because it's why did the Shulchan Aruch quote this Hanisha? Why did Shulchan Aruch only say Hashawa La Reza Shulchan Aruch? Why does he need the Mishnah Berurah to quote the Hanisha La Reza Maguna? So he says, why? Because it's the rabbi being, that's what it means, Hanisha La Reza Maguna, is the rabbi being too frum. So he's violating Hazariza Reza Meshuvah. He's not being Zariz about it, and so the Shulchan Aruch already. But the point is, we have to go as far, we have to be very clear that it's mutter for to save someone's life when it's necessary on the spot. We're absolutely obligated to do everything we can on the spot if it's necessary right now without question. Okay? So let's just look at the sugya now by the chola sheyeshbo sakana and what we do.
This question is sort of general, but also related. Mm-hmm. Like, you quoted the Mishnah Berurah here. Mm-hmm. Like, are there contemporary, I guess you could say, halachic poskim of the same weight but in different circles as the Mishnah Berurah? We talked about these issues and have different opinions. Like, I don't know, like Hasidic rabbis or like Sephardic rabbis or something like that.
So, everyone pretty much agrees to this. On this point, no one disagrees.
Okay.
So, there are contemporary poskim, but when this is like an accepted opinion. It's clear in the Gemara that for Cholos or Yesh Bo Sakana, where life is on the line right now, we do everything in our power, there's no question. So that, we'll talk about when it becomes an issue, we'll talk about it. This is clearly accepted by everybody. Without exception, that when life is on the line right now, and I'm emphasizing that, because sometimes, right, there are a lot of cases in like hospital or something, you have all the cholim sheyesh b'nefesh sakana, but not everyone needs attention right this second, so we can think about how to do things differently. The point is, when someone's a cholim sheyesh b'nefesh sakana, we don't want you to dawdle, because we're afraid that if you dawdle, then something bad can happen. So we want you to do everything that's necessary right now. The problem is, well, what if dawdling, nothing bad will happen? So then we have to start taking into consideration. Is it an Isser D'Oraisa? Is it an Isser D'Rabbanan? What's the level of the Isser? What can we do? How can we mitigate it? And we'll talk about that a lot. But the first level is that if doing anything is going to cause a problem, then we don't do it.
So let's just skip this on. The famous Gemara. I always say it's a famous Gemara, but are there non-famous Gemaras? It works.
Okay.
And they move the camera. If you can't see this, tell me. I don't know. Maybe a little bit darker. It's getting a little darker. Okay.
So we're not going to go through this whole Gemara inside, but it's important just to see the highlights of it.
So we're going to start from here. Right? So I'll read it because it's...
What was
This is Yuma, Hey Hey Amar Aleph, so 85a. Okay? This is coming off the end of Maseches Yuma, is talking about cases where you're Mechal Yom Kippur to save life, or you're Mechal Shabbos to save life. Okay? It's what about a pregnant woman who needs to eat on Yom Kippur, someone who's under the building collapses, the same page on top. That was the previous discussion, that's where the whole brain death circuit comes from. Fine, we're not going to talk about that today. So the Gemara says like this. Ukvar Haya, Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Mechalchim Bederech. Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah were all walking on the path, we're all walking together. The Levi Hasadar and Levi the Shamans, Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's son, Mechalchim Acharei, were walking behind them. Nishala Sha'ela Zubifnehem. This question was asked in front of them. A bit of a story narrative, kind of interesting. Okay. Minayin l'pikuach nefesh edofes Hashamans. How do you know that pikuach nefesh, saving a life, is dofes Shabbos? You can violate Shabbos for pikuach nefesh. So the assumption of the question is, what do we assume? What is this question assuming? How do you know pikuach nefesh is dofes Shabbos? What does it assume?
That
it does, right? We assume it does. It's so clear to us it does. We just want to know, how do you know? The Gemara never asked, is it or not? We just want to know, how do you know if it's true? Okay, so now Rabbi Shmuel gives one answer. I'm not going to read it right now. Okay, so Rabbi Shmuel gives an answer. And Rabbi Kiva gives another answer. Okay, which aren't really our focus right now. The next half of the Gemara gives more answers. Okay, so I now have to erase my Okay. Okay, so that was two answers. The different limudim. Okay, here's a third answer. Rav Elazar gives another answer. Here's a fourth answer. Fifth answer. And sixth answer. So let's see six. I should not write on top of it if we're going to. Okay, so it's Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh. Okay, so this is a famous one. So Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh, right, some of them are not as famous, and it's not worth going into the intricacies. They all try to prove that we can mechal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. So Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh Omer, v'shamru b'nei Yisrael as Shabbos, right? It's a pasuk from Kiddush. On Shabbos day, we say v'shamru b'nei Yisrael as Shabbos, b'nei Yisrael kept the Shabbos. So how does that tell you Pikuach Nefesh is Shabbos? They kept the Shabbos, that's great. So you take, no, you have to keep the Shabbos. So he says, Amra Torah, the Torah says, Kalel alav Shabbos achas, kedei sheyishmor Shabbos harbe. The Torah says, violate one Shabbos for this guy, so that he will be able to keep many Shabboses in the future, right? He says, the Torah wants to maximize Shabbos observance. How will we maximize Shabbos observance? Well, if you violate it now to save his life, he'll be able to live till next week, and he'll be able to keep another Shabbos.
But then,
so none of these are going to apply to non-Jews. None of these are going to apply to non-Jews. You're right. We'll talk about at the end of, I don't know if we'll get to it today, who we michal Shabbos for, bida araisa, to do a malacha araisa, we'll see. And this certainly does not apply to non-Jews. Absolutely. It also, what if he won't live till next Shabbos? Okay. So let's see. Fine. The last answer is the famous one. It's more famous than that one. Is Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmua. If I was there, right, in this whole parade, so Hava Amina, I would have said, Didi Adifa Mididhu. My explanation is better than theirs. Okay, well, you weren't there, so, yeah. What does it say? V'chai bohem v'lo shiyonishma. The Pasuk says, Eila ha-mitzvos asher ya'aseh otam ha'adam. These are the mitzvos that a person should do. V'chai bohem, and he should live by them. Or he should live by the mitzvos. It's a nice phrase. He says, what do you mean, v'chai b'hem? Not you should live by them. V'chai b'hem, you should live through them. V'chai, that's not clear at all. B'hem. Right, you should live through them. V'lo shigelos b'hem. Right, you should not die because of them. The mitzvahs are intended to give us life, not to take away life. And so if you have to sacrifice your life to perform this mitzvah, you're going to die. If you don't mechal Shabbos, v'chai b'hem v'lo shiyomos b'hem. The mitzvahs are given to give life, not to take away life. So v'chai b'hem v'lo shiyomos b'hem. We're mechal Shabbos, we're mechal Yom Kippur to make sure that we can continue to live. There are three exceptions to this, or the famous three exceptions. Three things you're not allowed to do under any circumstances, even on the pain of death. Right. What?
Avodah Zarah. This is not so helpful right now. Shvi'as Dama. So, that's important. Idolatry, illicit relationships. And I'm being vague on that because not everyone is Yari Meliyahu, or it's a little complicated. Not our issue right now. And murder. Murder is clear. Right? Murder can kill people, it can save your life. Idolatry is a little bit, what counts as idolatry, what doesn't. What is Arias, what's not Arias, depending on the situation. But well, these three things you can't do, whatever they are. Shabbos is not one of them. Okay? So why is DD Adifa Mididu? Why is mine better than theirs? It was nice. And one of the previous, you know, Limudim was nice too. Why is this one so much better? So Amar Rava, Rava tells why. L'kulu itlu pircha. Bar mi d'shmuel d'lesle pircha. Each one of the previous six, I can refute. Except for Shmuel, this last one, Amar Bihud Amar Shmuel, I can't refute this one. I find a problem with each limud. Right? And he goes through, and he goes through, and he goes through, and he goes through. Right? And so, up to here. Right? He's disproving each and every single one. Okay? Except for the last one. He says, and what's more, all six, the kulu, and all of those, ashkechan vadai. We only find vadai. If the person's life is actually, we know he's going to die, you can mechalel Shabbos based on one of these six limudim, mechalel Shabbos achas. If he's going to die, then you want to maximize Shabbos observance, then you can let him. But if he's only, what if he's not suffering minalim? What if he's, I don't know. Hey, he might live, he might die. It's not certain, he's not certainly going to die. We don't know. How do you know you're mechalel Shabbos for a doubtful case, for a suffering? We don't know. For any of these cases, you don't know. Kulu ashkechan vadai, suffering minalim? We only know from Shmuel's v'chai b'hem, you need to live by them. The Torah should not cause you even a remote case to risking your life. You don't have to risk any part of your life, even the suffix, to keep Shabbos. And therefore, v'chai b'hem teaches us, suffix b'gof nefesh eshtof Shabbos. Okay? So long as there is a doubt in your mind that this person's life is at risk, a doubt in p'gof nefesh is considered just like v'adei p'gof nefesh, and therefore it's up to you. Right, the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara was given to each and every person, not to the emergency room, to the emergency room physician also. He's not exempt, but it was given to every single person. You don't have to be an expert. If you think it's a suffix, you mechalel Shabbos. That's why the Torah was given to each and every one of us. So the question is, well, if it's clear, it's not. The only time you call for a question is if it's clear in your mind that it's not pigoach nefesh. Right? There are certain types of stitches a kid, you know, might need on Shabbos. Hey, person, does he need stitches? Does he not need stitches? I don't know. He's not dying right now, right? Or
might be a
it depends where it is. Depends where it is. And Sakanas Eber will talk about what you're allowed to do, but it's not Sakanas Nefashos. You can sometimes be pretty clear, right? Kids like cut their chins. It's not Pikoch Nefesh. It needs to be stitched up, right? Because it could prevent an infection. It could, you know, we'll stitch it up. Maybe on Shabbos we'll talk about it. But it doesn't look like right now it's Sakanas Nefashos. His life is not at risk. Or, you know, someone twists their arm or sprains their ankle, and they fall, and they can't get up. Right? Okay. They're in pain. Might be Sakana Sever, might be Chol She'en Bo Sakana. Is it a Chol She'yesh Bo Sakana? I think we're all pretty confident saying, look, he sprained his ankle. He fell to the ground. He needs to be treated. We'll figure out exactly what we can and cannot do. But his life is not at risk. Okay? I don't know. You have an older person who falls, though. Right? And they fall to the ground. Now, they might have serious problems, right? They may have hit their head. Then we're not sure. It depends what's going on. It has to be contextual. If you're concerned, then it's not for a reason to be concerned. Okay? And someone can try to talk you out of it, but if you're concerned, that's enough. And if you're not sure, and you call Hatzalah, and they come and they say, we're certain it's not a problem. So if they're certain it's not a problem, they know better than you, so it's not Chol She'yesh Bo Sakana. You might be one of the other things, and we'll deal with it appropriately. Or if you don't think it's a problem, and Hatzalah does think it's a problem, that's a problem. Then you go in, right? They're like, I don't know, he bumped his head, he'll be fine. And they're like, well, he bumped his head in such and such a way, and he, You know, he only blacked out for a couple of seconds. He's only blacked out for a couple of seconds, and they'll be like, oh, you black out at all, you need to be seen in Sakanas Kafashos. Okay, but you're like, but it was only a couple of seconds. But if they know better, and they say, look, even a couple of seconds is dangerous, so a couple of seconds is dangerous, and Mechal Shabbos would have to. So if anyone has a suffix, we're going to Mechal Shabbos, as long as we're all on equal footing, right? If someone more who knows more and who can be definitive about it, so they can trump you. But short of that, not. Okay? So how long are you considered to be a Chol HaShayish Bo Sakana? So, I don't know, I have this here. But there's, so there are a lot of modern books on medicine on Shabbos. So we'll be quoting some of them. You don't have to see any of them inside, but there's some interesting books. There's, is it Art Scroll? Feldman. I think it's Art Scroll. Right, Bodner posts a book called The Halachas of Medicine on Shabbos. Figure book, it's in English. There's another saber called Refuas HaShabbos by Rabbi Michal Chizkiah. But they actually translated it to English. The English is very thorough. It goes through all the principles and all sorts of diseases and all sorts of medical equipment. The English is a little bit like strange to read because it was translated, but it's still very good. So he has a lot of insights on a lot of these issues, and he quotes a lot of people. So he tries to prove that you're a chol HaShayish Bo Sakana until you get better. Okay, until you're actually completely better from whatever it is that caused you to be a chol HaShayish Bo Sakana, so you are a chol HaShayish Bo Sakana. So just something to keep in mind as we proceed through. Okay, so okay, we discussed how immediate is the sakana. It's always nice to know that when they say it, just ad hoc that I say it in the same order that I thought to write it. So how do so who decides if you're in the sakana? Right, Dr. Abraham, the Nishmas Avram. So Nishmas Avram is four svarim on all of Chalak Mashal Narach. Dr. Abraham, as Abraham is in English, also Nishmas Avram. I think it's only in three volumes. He was the chairman of the Department of Medicine at Shari Tzedek for many years. So he says, he's the one who says the Torah, he's the one who uses this analogy, the Torah was given to every single person for us to make a decision on our own. Right, so Tosfos in one place says, it's Yuma Ayin Aleph, but he says, Shelo yucha lavo b'shum inyan lidei mitat Yisrael. There has to be, there's no reason that Shabbos should ever cause someone to die. Right? Tosfos is clear, Shelo yucha b'shum inyan, under no circumstances, that someone should come to die. So Dr. Abram likes to tell the story. He says, you have two mothers, and they each take home their baby from the hospital. They just had a baby, they come home, and the baby is crying. And the baby doesn't stop crying. And finally, the woman nurses the baby, stops crying, and the baby keeps crying. And the baby doesn't stop crying. And eventually, he stops for a couple minutes and starts up again, and it's all night. And so she came home Friday morning, and it's Friday night, and it's all night, and the woman's going nuts, right? Hospitals are not a place for people to get better. They don't let you sit in the hospital, right? If anyone's ever been there or known people there, right, they don't let you sleep so much. The woman just got out of the hospital. She's tired. She's stressed. And this baby's not crying. And she's starting to get nervous. And then she realizes this is her eighth kid. And like, this is what kids do. She gives the baby to her husband. She goes to sleep. And the husband stays up for a couple hours. And they alternate shifts. And no problem. Then you have another mother. I've exceeded my profile storage space. That's great. So you have another mother, and it's her first kid, and she's so excited. She's going out of her mind. She doesn't know what to do. And this baby's not stopping to cry. And she gives it to her husband, and the husband can't calm down the baby. And she can't go to sleep because she's so nervous. And the husband can't go to sleep. And they're both stressed out. And they're both worried that this baby can't breathe. He's crying so much. So can she Mechal Shabbos? The woman next door has the same kid, the same story. He says, yeah. If you're concerned, then you Mechal Shabbos. This woman has a lot more experience. She knows better. This woman has no idea. It's up to you. It could be the same exact situation. If you're nervous, then we Mechal Shabbos. Okay? So his line is, I just quoted it because it was a good line. He said, it's your decision, and only you can make it, because you're the only one there. And the only reason that you won't go is if you're willing, if you're not willing to sign after 120 years, that you were not willing to do something for this patient on Shabbos, then you're okay. You have to be saying that I am willing to sign the dotted line, nothing needs to be done. If you're not willing to sign your name on that and take all the responsibility for it, then you Mechal Shabbos. Right? You do what you would do on any other day of the week. Now don't say like, you know, it's inconvenient, it's annoying, but you should do what you would do on any other day of the week. If any other day of the week, you would go in because you're nervous, then you go in on Shabbos because you're nervous. You can't say, well, it's annoying, it's or that I don't want Mechal Shabbos. You don't do any of that, you go in. Okay? Fine. One more just piece on this. Where is it? Okay. So it's in Shulchan Aruch. It's in Shin Kaf Ches again. Se'ir Tesvav. Okay, so 15. It's on page Kuf Samechei on the top here. Okay, it's like, I think it's the third page of the packet. Yeah, it's the third page of the packet. Right, you see Tesvav? Yeah? Alex, found it? Okay. So we're gonna find a lot in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. They're talking about all sorts of interesting medications that they used and interesting things they did to help people get better from their illnesses. And sometimes they might sound a little bit funny to us, but we're just gonna assume that they're doing whatever they thought was efficacious at the time. So we're going to try to learn from the principles, not from the case. So in this case, the person needs figs, otherwise he's going to die. I don't know of any medical condition that requires figs. But we're going to assume that that's what they thought, that's what the doctors thought at the time. So now it would be antibiotics. But it would be the same idea. Okay, so sometimes we'll see funny cases, we'll have to know exactly what did they actually think was going on. We'll talk about that a little bit. But here, the reason that this is quoted is not because of the figs. It's not, the Shulchan isn't giving you medical advice. It's just telling you, well, under, we think figs help. So if we think figs help, so then we'll apply this rule. So I'll read this one. Amduhu, so perishit bonenu b'machato v'shiru, right? They looked at this guy, and they estimated, they guessed, harof from the doctors, shitzarech gorgeres achas. He needs one fig. He's going to die unless he gets a fig. He needs, but how many figs does he need? He needs one fig. If he had one fig, he's not going to die. Virotsu asara, and 10 people ran, each in different directions. Veheviu lo kolachas progeres. And each 10 people, they all heard, you know, it was in shul, the doctor said, the man needs a fig. And 10 people go run and pick figs off the tree. So picking a fig off the tree is an isur d'orais on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do that, from the Torah, right? It's a melacha of kotzer, of cutting. But it's a kol sheyesh basakana, it's permissible, right? But he only needs one fig. Now we have 10 figs. So we have 9 people who violated Shabbos, right? Only one of them did it beheter. Now they didn't all say, well, you can go, and I can go, and let's all go together. No, each person ran and tried to save this guy, right? Each person wants to do the mitzvah of Gof Nefesh. As they should. They should run to do this. So he says, Kulam Pturim. Each person is exempt. Why is he exempt? He only needed one fig.
It's the intention.
Right? It's not only the intention, it's a little bit more than that. V'yesh lahem sachar tov meisach. So normally the Shulchan Aruch tells you, the Shulchan Aruch is clear. It sometimes gives you a little bit of an exaggeration. But it's a rule of it's a book of rules. So here he says, "V'yesh lahem sachar tov meis Hashem," and they have good reward from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a little bit odd. The Shulchan Aruch can tell you, "Afilu hivri barishono." He got better from the first fig. Everyone's not only putter, but they also get sachar tov meis Hashem. They get a good reward. Why? It's more just the intention. What's the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh? To save a life on Shabbos. What's the mitzvah?
Trying.
To try to save his life, right? If I try to mechal Shabbos to save his life and I don't succeed. Right? I drove my ambulance to the spot and I used my walkie-talkie and I wrote down a whole bunch of things and I tried to shock the guy and assuming the electricity is a daraisa and I'm giving him injections and doing all these chilul Shabbos. And it turns out he's dead. I didn't do anything. So did I violate Shabbos? No, I tried to save his life. The outcome is nice. You know, I want to save his life. Great. But it's the trying to save his life, which is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to try your best to save his life. All these 10 people tried their best to save his life. So long as they're all trying in good faith, and they're not Mechal Shabbos for no reason, they each ran because they assume they're going to be the one to get the fig, or I can get it faster. Even if I can get it faster than him, I'll get the fig faster, it's better. There's no Chilul Shabbos involved.
You also have to say it that way, otherwise no one can save lives on Shabbos.
Right. So it's encouraging you to say, we should all try our best. And not only, but it says more than just Pturim, it could have been more all exempt. Fine, if we'd all be exempt, we'd both do it, because there's no liability. But not only is there no liability, we each did a mitzvah. I picked the fig and no one ate it. No one ate my fig. He didn't even need the fig. But so, we each did the mitzvah of trying to save his life, and that's what counts in this case. Okay? What? So now what's the story of those 9 figs? It's a good question. So they were picked b'Shabbos b'heter. Right? So I'm assuming they're not to be mukta. Because I don't know. It's an interesting question, right? So normally, if you violate Shabbos and pick a fig, Right? If you violate Shabbos and make a fake, or you knock it off by accident, so it's mokzah, right? It's nolan, you did something improper. Here it was done, the heter. It gets back to the question, let's say the person needs beef, right? And the only beef you have is in the form of your cow. And the cow is still mooing. Right? So what do? You shock the cow, right? Now, how much meat could this sick person possibly eat, right? Now, was I allowed to shock the cow? Yeah, even though I only needed one steak. You can't make a steak, you have to shock the whole cow, right? So what do you do with the rest of that meat that was shechted? Can you eat it or not? So we assume you can't, but it's a drabon. Because we don't want you to make, you want you to do more than you need. But in theory, it's an interesting question. We'll get to that maybe. How do you deal with these things that you did that have outcomes? Is it mukzer? It's a very interesting question, right? It's the same question, but it's a little bit different from the cow maybe? Because, right, the cow, I had to shech the whole cow. I didn't have a choice. I didn't have to pick 10 figs, right? Those 9 are actually completely expert. The cow had to be completely dead, because if I didn't check the entire cow, I couldn't have. So it's not exactly parallel. So that's a good question. I don't have to look it up. I'm not sure. It's a good question. Okay, so... So Dr. Abraham tells a story. I think he writes this. I'm not sure. So, Rishlom Zalman Norbach was asked a question. So let's say, you know, someone's sick, and someone, let's say, collapses to the floor, and they call Hatzalah. So the model for Hatzalah, at least here, is, and in Israel I think it works similarly, is that the reason that Hatzalah can get to you faster than EMTs is because of the model that they developed. Right? The model that Hatzalah develops is that each person, each medic, right, has in their own radio, and they're spread out doing their own regular thing. And Jews tend to live in Jewish communities, and so Jews are spread out randomly in Jewish communities. So if we have a random number of Hatzalah people spread out, we assume that they can be in all those areas. So if they happen to be where the Jews are, they can actually get to the person faster, right? So what happens is, you radio in, you know, they get a radio call, you know, the sick person wherever, and they give codes and whatever, and you go and you save them. And you try to, you're closer, whoever's closer, whoever's not closer, right? And they have some system, you radio in, oh, I'm going, I'm closest, right? So the question is, well, what if the first person gets there, and 5 people are going, right? There's, let's say 3 people usually go. And the first person gets there, and the guy's dead. He's just dead. He's been dead for days. Someone just realized, right? Someone opened the door, there's a guy lying on the floor. Called it Tzalah. He didn't know if it was a Tzalah. He thought it was a Tzalah, right? He thought it was a Tzalah. He did the right thing. He called it Tzalah. The guy drove over, and the guy has no pulse. He has not had a pulse for days. He's dead. And the other 2 guys are still driving. Should the medic who gets there first tell them to stop driving or not? What do you think? Right now they're coming, they're driving for absolutely no reason. Right? I mean, there's no reason to be mechal shabbos. The man's dead. Or he's fine. Either way, let's make it better. Completely fine. False alarm, everyone's fine. Or he's dead. Either way. But there's no reason for anyone to be mechal shabbos, let's say. So what do you do with the other 2 guys driving now? What do you think? You let them drive. What do you think? Do you understand the case?
Yeah, I understand the case, but I have no idea what it is.
No, you can get, I mean, I can, it can go either way, right? Like, on the one hand, right? So you think
you're in the car with them?
I got there first, and I have a radio. Right? We all have radios, and the man's dead. And they're still driving, so like, they'll get there in a couple of minutes.
Tell them to pull over and chill.
They should tell them, like, look, put your car down, no more Chil Shabbos, right? Chil Shabbos isn't necessary anymore. Yes, when you left, you did the right thing, absolutely. We all did the right thing. We all left, but the man's dead. What are you going to do?
So the question you're asking is, can you be Mechal Shabbos to keep other people from...
Right, so now, wait a minute, to call them on the radio after the Chil Shabbos.
But it's not, because it's still part of the operation. Like,
no, well, no, it's not. To tell him to stop?
Oh, yeah.
No, but, okay, so, right?
No, so, once they get there, then you tell them.
Oh, once they get there. Okay, so that's different. But to call them on the radio, so, well, what... So now we have to talk about... We didn't talk about levels of Yisurim, but there are things that are Asur Midoraisa from the Torah, and things that are Asur Midrabanan.
Right, so the car might be Doraisa on your radio.
The car is Doraisa. What's the malacha of driving? Why are you not allowed to drive on Shabbos?
Spark.
You're creating a fire, right? So we'll... I don't know if we'll talk about it. I think we'll talk about engines, maybe. There's interesting Shubhas Rishon Mazal Norbach that, like, you actually have to... I opened a Wikipedia page on engines and, like, a 4-piston engine and exactly how it works. So what happens is... So there's some guy, Rishon Zalman Orbach, when he was 24, wrote a sefer called Ma'orei Yesh. One of the first, like... Not the first. One of the earlier books on electricity. He wants to know, can you turn on the light on Yom Tov? That was his question. Can you turn on the light on Yom Tov? And he wrote this phenomenal book when he was 24. And he wants to know. But he goes through all the issues of electricity and lights and burning and everything. So since he's written many, many letters and tshuvas back and forth, and so they published all of them, and some engineer just, they decided when they republished it, he's just going to explain to you how all these things work. You know, because like Rosh Hashanah, it was explained to him, so he knew how it worked. But I had no idea, especially when they're using Hebrew rabbinic terms, like you have to wonder how he's referring to an engine. So he explains to you how all these things work. So the way I'm told that a car engine works is that when you push on the gas, so gas comes into the piston, maybe not the piston, there's like a cup here, right? And here's a piston. Like a cup, right? And there's like an inlet here, and an outlet here. And you let the gas in, right? And then this piston comes, smashes it down. So what happens to gas when it gets compressed?
It explodes.
It explodes, right? It explodes and it makes the piston fly up really high, really hard. Right? And if we can construct an axle in such a way, right, we can make the axle spin by having pistons in different places, right? If there's only the pistons here and one piston's here, we can kind of create a circle and put the pistons at different angles, and we can turn our car and it can go. When I push the gas, more gas comes in here, and there's a bigger explosion, there's an explosion, and I can adjust the amount of gas that gets in to make a bigger explosion, a smaller explosion, which for some time that's not a problem, the size of the explosion. But each time I push the gas, I'm causing a fire. Making fire on Shabbos is usher, and I am making fire. Okay? We'll talk about shutting off cars, which is sort of interesting. But turning on a car, driving in a car, even once it's on, every time I hit the gas, I'm making more fire. Making fire on Shabbos is usher. Using a radio, using a walkie-talkie. It's usher, right? We don't use walkie-talkies, but why?
Electricity.
And electricity is usher because it's fire. Where's the fire?
Sparks.
Really? You have a cell phone?
Yeah.
You have any fire in your cell phone?
No.
I hope not, right? So it's hard to say, like, look. Oh, okay. I have a tech concert. But, right, it's hard. A little fire that we can't really see, right? Traditionally, we assume it's fire, but I don't know, it's hard to say. We'll have a shiur about electricity. But we're going to assume that electricity is. So the Chazon Ish thinks electricity is a daraisa. We'll talk about why. Most other posts can assume that electricity is a darabanan, maybe minig. Aside from the Chazon Ish, it seems like talking on the walkie talkie is a lesser form of an iser than. Or using electricity that doesn't light up a light bulb, right? A light bulb might be a problem because the metal's getting hot, right? Like you said. If you heat a metal till it glows, so that's also called burning on Shabbos. I mean, what's burning? Making a fire? Is it just making a spark, or is it causing a wood to burn? I'm causing the metal to burn, but metal doesn't burn, it glows, right? That's what happens when you heat metal. So that's called burning, that's called hara. But
there's always like light bulbs on, like, I pick like radios, like, I don't know, like a top, like one of those.
Yeah, but they're not really.
It has like a little light bulb on it.
Yeah, we'll talk. When we do electricity, we'll talk about different types of light bulbs. Those are all LEDs. Those aren't incandescent bulbs. So an incandescent bulb, which are now illegal, right? You should know 100 watt incandescent bulbs are illegal.
Illegal?
Yes, there's a federal law that prohibits the sale or the purchase, I don't remember which, maybe both, of incandescent bulbs.
Why?
They're not environmentally friendly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so an incandescent bulb, because they exist, we'll talk about them.
There's a black market in the high street, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure there's.
It's on the street corners.
Right, incandescent bulb, and so. Right, this is positive and negative. Right, it's really the opposite, positive and negative. That's what you're doing with Christian, right? So you have this, like, two metals come out here, and then there's, like, this filament here. So this is made of tungsten. Tungsten is W on the. Why is it W? I have no idea. On the periodic table, I always remember. I don't remember where W came from. Like it's a lot of. I don't know. But it's W. It's tungsten. And what happens is you flow electricity through this, and your tungsten starts glowing, and it gets really, 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 really hot. And because it's in the vacuum, right? That's why it's. I wonder why the bulb is glowing. So it's in the vacuum, so it doesn't glow or it doesn't go out. And because in the vacuum, it just glows and. The amount of electricity goes through can change our colors. So this is going to cause havara. This is burning. A fluorescent light is not really anything to draw. A fluorescent light works not like this.
I can draw it, yes. I mean, it's just a tube. You have to do it here and then do it here.
And this is full of gas. Right? And as long as you can start a reaction over here, you can excite the gas and create a reaction in the gas that's going to eventually cause. Leave the detail on that, right? You can excite the electrons in physics, chemistry. Okay. What causes light when you excite electrons? It's actually when they come back to their regular state, not when they go out of their regular state, right? If you're exciting it from one level to the next, you give... Well, it gives off light, right? When you apply heat or you apply electricity, so the electrons move from the lower level to the higher level, that doesn't actually show light. Light happens when it comes back. Doesn't matter. Anyway, these tubes are coated with phosphorus. Or some fluorescent type of thing, that when the electrons hit them and they come back off, it gives off a light. Okay? Nothing's burning here, actually. Question is there a spark when this begins or not? When you turn it on, does it start with a spark or not start with a spark? But once it's on, there's nothing happening. And LEDs have none of that. LEDs are completely just electrons flowing back and forth with certain type of conductors, I don't remember exactly. There's no electricity, there's no heat, there's no gas, there's no nothing going on. It's just providing a light based on the flow of electrons. So you have to wonder, there's no burning. So leaving the question of electricity aside, incandescent light bulb should be, I don't care how you got this to work, it should be a diode, right? Even if you put it in your mouth and it glowed because it was in your mouth, because it got hot, then that's going to be a problem, because you're making this metal burn, you put it in the pot soup, right? So you're making this metal burn, I don't think it actually will, but let's say. This, we can talk about, the fluorescent, but the LED, there's nothing inherently in the LED that causes burning. Nothing's actually glowing. So we have to talk about electricity separately. Is the electricity separate? Is it an issur? Because the LED itself is not. So on the walkie-talkie, as long as you only have an LED, the only question really is the electricity. So can you mechalel Shabbos to pick up the walkie-talkie to stop the other guy?
Yeah. Okay.
So should I violate, it's not my issur, it's his issur.
Right.
Can I violate one issur to prevent you from violating a more severe issur?
You should, yeah.
Interesting question. So Rishlomo Zalman said, whoa, wait a minute. The guy who's driving, why is he driving? He's driving because he's doing the mitzvah, right? It's the same case as the figs. When the guy brings the fig, the first fig, does he have to yell, everybody stop? No, everyone can, they're all coming to do the mitzvah, you don't have to stop. Not only do you not have to stop him, you have no heter to use that walkie-talkie. You're not allowed to mechalel Shabbos. He's not doing anything wrong. You say, if he was doing something wrong and I can prevent it, then we have something to talk about, right? If I'm doing something wrong and you can do a lesser iser to prevent my bigger iser, so then we can talk about it. Maybe that's right. But if I'm not doing anything wrong, then you can't violate a lesser iser. I'm not doing anything wrong. As long as I'm driving to help someone who I believe is sick, who's in need of my assistance, I'm not mechalel Shabbos.
Like the emphasis, like a malacha or something, emphasis a maser of like what nothing.
I don't think so. I think if someone's would have said it no matter what. As long as I'm doing something that's trying to save someone's life.
Why does it carry over? In other words, why isn't it like just cut? Like in other words, he was doing Pekuach Nefesh and then now it's over.
I still think I'm doing Pekuach Nefesh. The same thing with the figs. I'm only continuing because of Pekuach Nefesh. I'm only continuing to drive because I believe in full faith.
What if you knew that the guy got
so what if you knew? So then you have to stop. Once you knew, you'd have to stop. Why are you continuing to drive? As long as you're violating, continuing to violate Shabbos, because you know, it's Pekuach Nefesh, right? Meaning, according to what you know, it is. He's according to what you know, he's still alive, right? You're not doing anything wrong. And therefore, the guy who got there is not allowed to mechalel Shabbos on the, I don't care what level of Isser the radio requires. You're not allowed to do anything, Usser, to prevent me from doing something that's mutter, right? You see the difference? Right? Everyone understand that? That's an important point. Yeah. Mindset is an important factor here. If I believe that what I'm doing is still Shabbos, and I'm not crazy, right? If I'm crazy, so I'm not crazy. But I'm not crazy. I'm a normal person. This is what normal people do when they call on themselves and they drive. Right? You can't do crazy things, right? You have to do the normal thing. If you're doing the normal thing, that's a responsible thing to do, is to drive. So long as I believe that I'm being the Chalal Shabbos and I don't know otherwise, for all I know, I'm still doing it. I'm not doing anything wrong. So then I don't have to, like, why should I stop? And not only why should I stop, you can't. You can't violate Shabbos to stop my permissible action.
First thing is, wouldn't the Chofet Kepiach HaMisefa, like they have the warnings and the else, they're doing very, like, wouldn't that play into the effect of here? Wouldn't that
am I doing an avera?
Technically no.
Right, so that's what he's saying. So ilhochech tochiach means that if I'm doing something wrong, you have to tell me, right? Can you violate an iser to tell me? No. So here, if you could, so the question is, what if I could let you know without violating an iser? What if I could just yell? Right, what if you're riding a bike? I don't know. Let's say you have walkie-talkies on the string or something. Let's say you could do it without violating an iser, so then it's a question of something to talk about, right? If you could do it without violating an iser, even though I'm doing the right thing, should you tell me to stop? So that we could talk about it. Should you tell me to stop? Because I still think I'm doing the right thing. But you're certainly not allowed to violate any iser to stop me from doing the right thing. Right? When there's no reason to violate an iser, so I think your point is very valid. We have to think about it. If I can stop you from driving, let's say now you're driving. If I can stop you from driving without violating an iser, so then maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't, I don't know. But certainly when I have to violate the iser to tell you, then I can't.
Isn't there, at the point with, then they run into a problem with people, like the paramedics, no work runs out, let's say they go to answer a call, but they're allowed to drive back afterwards.
We'll talk a lot about driving back. We'll talk about driving back. There's a general machlokas or Shlomo Zalman, Orbach, and Rav Moshe Feinstein. If you go, can you violate Shabbos b'doraisa to come back? Rav Moshe thinks yes, or Shlomo Zalman thinks no.
Can you listen to the radio on the way to keep yourself awake?
If you have to, yeah, absolutely.
Really?
If you're going to save a life and this is going to keep you awake, you can do it. You need to buy a coffee to keep yourself awake, you can do it also. I mean,
right.
Reasonably. Meaning, you're not like, oh, I'm fixed on coffee, but like, if you're actually concerned, then you're saving someone's life, and you need to do it, you need to do it.
And what about just, if you're already in the car, might as well, you know, put on the radio, right?
That's not right. It's not necessary. You're not sick, right? I mean, we can talk about it for the sick person, but you're not sick. If you needed to stay awake, or it's the middle of the night, I don't know, yeah, absolutely. You need whatever you need to save this guy's life, and you think it needs to be saved right now, right? There's no, it's not like a hospital where you can plan the whole week for this.
Right.
It's immediate right now, it would be fine. But I think Ariel's point is very interesting, right? What if I could prevent the Chilul Shabbos without violating Shabbos myself? Maybe I would have to take that into consideration. So we'll just talk a couple more points and then we'll go to Avon Yisrael. Fine. So we talked last time, we just mentioned it, I think it's true. When we were talking about who's a Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana, so we included the diabetic, we included the terminal cancer patient, because even if there's no Sakana now, there could be a sakana in the future, there will be a sakana in the future, that we could mitigate now. He's not going to die right now, he'll die in the future. But I could do something to extend his life in the future, so then we certainly will mechal Shabbos. We could, right? If it doesn't need to be done right now, we'll have to think about how to mechal Shabbos. But certainly we're going to permit something. We'll talk about what? So Rav Moshe Feinstein actually says, well, he says, the current condition that can develop into something dangerous is considered dangerous already now. If you have something that's considered dangerous, right, then you already have it. It can't be like, I'm concerned in the future, I'll have a heart attack, you know? Many 120-year-old people die of heart attacks. So I'm, you know, 30-something years old, so I should violate Shabbos now, I might have a heart attack in the future. He says, no. It's something that you have now, it's something that's reasonable. You have this now, but, I mean, that's also reasonable, right? Many older people have heart attacks. It's reasonable. He says, no, it has to be something that exists right now that can develop into something more dangerous. Right, so the Binyan Sion talks about this. Binyan Sion of Yaakov Ettlinger has a tshuva. He says, well, why is it ever mutter to go sailing? Or ever mutter to go anywhere dangerous, right? People die when they go sailing. Right, I mean, not a lot of people die. But some people don't make it back. So why is that permissible? So he says, well, the danger isn't happening right now. It's not dangerous right now when we start off on the voyage. Something's dangerous. There might be a danger sometime in the future. In that case, we follow the majority.
So are you allowed to put on sunscreen on Shabbat with the Mishcha, but do you prevent skin cancer in the future?
Right, so that's a question. So that would be a very interesting question to test this, right? So you're saying there's no reason to believe that right now you're not in any danger, right?
Right.
Right now, you're not in any danger.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Well, you never know.
You don't have some pre-malignancy.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with you. So could you, according to the Spinincian, could you violate Shabbos to prevent something in the future? So the majority of people who go out get skin cancer. I don't think that's true.
Right.
I think that's not true, right?
Right.
So he would say no. When the danger's in the future, so then we follow the majority. So Rav Zilberstein just tries to say these two things really exist. Rav Moshe is really saying, so the Rav Moshe and the Binyan Sion go against each other, right? The Binyan Sion says, well, the danger, if it's not in front of you, and the danger will only exist later, you have to follow the majority. Saying no, so he thinks Rav Moshe is just saying the same thing. Look, you just have to use common sense. If something is happening now to you, and this thing could develop, if someone has diabetes, right, but his kidneys are fine, but his kidneys are going to fail 30 years from now. So we don't say, oh, one's kidneys, one's blood sugar, we don't do that. He has a condition right now, and that condition will develop into something more dangerous. So that's that condition is already enough to be Mechal Shabbos. We'll have to think about exactly how to do it, how to deal with it. So the Beis Yosef quotes one other opinion, Rabbi Yerucham says, if something's happening right now, and it will cause a danger later on, you can only do an Issur D'Rabban. You can't do an Issur D'Oraisa. So this is Rabbi Yerucham. So it's unclear if we pass on this way. And Rav Zil, we're seeing this in this Rufus HaShabbos, he thinks that we don't. If something, he says, look, the Rabbi Yerucham says, the line is, Afilu ba'od shanim rabos yistak, and he'll be in danger in many years from now. You already can do stuff, you can only do stuff now with Midrabanan. You can't do it D'Oraisa. So Rav Zil wants to say, yeah, that's only if it doesn't exist already. But if something exists already, if a man has diabetes now, so according to the Rabbi Yerucham, if he has diabetes now, he'll only develop a heart attack, kidney disease 20 years from now. So can I do it D'Oraisa or Midrabanan, according to Rabbi Yerucham? It sounds like only D'Rabanan, right? So Rav Zil wants to say, no, that's only if we're afraid that something may happen in the future. But if something exists currently, and that very thing that exists currently will develop into something worse in the future, and then we're already allowed to mechal b'doraisa. We may. We still have to use a little bit of seichel and figure out how exactly we're going to do it. But he wants to read that even for the Rabbi Yerucham. And we'll go over the Rabbi Yerucham again and practically what do we do with diabetes, other chronically ill people. But suffice it to say that we are going to allow, if someone has a condition right now, and they live with that condition, and that condition is going to cause a sakana in the future, we're going to allow them to violate d'oraisa today. Rabbi Yerucham, who says not, you can only do the Rabbanan, Rav Zilberstein wants to read it as saying, you can read the Rabbi Yerucham in two ways. Either, sorry Charlie, only the Rabbanan, you're not ill right now, you're not going to die anytime soon. Or you can say, no, that only means when something doesn't present itself right now. Any question?
Can you judge, can you possibly for different people based on like susceptibility? So for example, like someone, just to back to the skin cancer, like someone who has very, very light skin, maybe you can.
Maybe. Right. I said the majority of people. Well, who's the majority of people? The majority of, I mean, there's a difference between black people and white people in terms of skin cancer because their skin color is different.
Right.
It's not a racist thing, it's just a skin pigmentation thing. So, or maybe someone who's an albino is going to have a higher risk. It doesn't mean majority of who? Who's your denominator? So we'll have to talk about that, right?
Right.
If I say you, so the majority of who like you, it's not clear exactly who it's going to be. So you're right, I think it makes sense to me that that has to be considered, taken into consideration. In your circumstance, what are the majority of people?
Right.
Absolutely. Okay, very good. So let's...